Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today. Wednesday, February 25th, 2015. The peace talks are proceeding, but the two sides are not agreeing on creating one army for South Sudan.
During the pre-interim period, that's where, as per the provisions of the agreement we reached in Bahar Dar, we were supposed to have the two forces contained, disengaged and disarmed, and then the reintegration process.
And Amnesty International is out with its annual report, and South Sudan does not look good.
In South Sudan, we are disappointed that since the conflict started in December 2013, there has been no accountability for the crimes under international law committed in the course of the conflict.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The South Sudan peace talks in Addis Ababa have hit another stumbling block. After failing to see eye to eye yesterday on issues of governance and wealth sharing, today delegates cannot see eye to eye about how big the national army should be and what form it should take during a three-month pre-transition period. Under the terms of a power-sharing proposal put forward by regional bloc IGAD, the pre-transition period will start on April 1st, nearly a month after the two sides are supposed to have signed a final peace deal. As John Tanza reports from Addis Ababa, delegates from the rebel and government sides cannot agree on how to meld their two armies into one.
The government representative heading the thematic committee on security arrangements says the rebels of the SPLM in opposition are asking for too much. Peter Bashir Bendi, South Sudan's deputy minister for foreign affairs, says South Sudan simply cannot have two separate armies.
Our stumbling block, if we were to go by what we had agreed in Bahar Dar, where the notion of the two armies would not be there, because you need to have a pre-interim period. During the pre-interim period, that's where, as per the provisions of the agreement we reached in Bahar Dar, we were supposed to have the two forces contained, disengaged and disarmed, and then the reintegration process is done.
The SPLM in opposition spokesman says his group will not disband its forces until the South Sudan Army is made up of a professional and disciplined force. Port Kang Chol says the government delegation is reneging on what it had agreed to earlier on at the IGAD-led talks in Bahar Dar in September of last year. He says peace can only be achieved in South Sudan if the national army is overhauled.
There is need for us to have two different armies and then work out a mechanism for the amalgamation of the forces so that we form a army that belongs to the people of South Sudan, not a army that belongs to individual or tribe.
Bashir disagrees. He says the Kiir administration has good plans in place for individuals who defected to join the SPLM in opposition. The deputy minister says the talks can progress if the rebels truly make peace their top priority.
Our position as a government is that we want those who were part and parcel of the SPLA to come back with their seniority and ranks. And those non-combatants who have been absorbed, all other allies like the militias, we don't want. Because our notion is that we have accepted reforms in the security sector, including the army.
IGAD has given the warring parties 3 days to reach agreement on the outstanding issues within the various committees of governance, security and finance. Delegates are expected to report back to the mediators about the progress made at the committee level on Saturday. The Norwegian Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan says the two groups have little time to iron out their differences. Jan Peter says his country is working with the international community to urge the warring parties to reach a final peace deal by the deadline or face the consequences.
Pressure is building up on the parties. The UN Security Council are discussing and preparing for resolutions on sanctions towards those who are not promoting peace. So it's coming to a very crucial moment for the parties and for the people of South Sudan.
The warring parties have been blaming each other for not respecting previous agreements signed by President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, including a cessation of hostility agreement. The latest deal signed last month recommits both sides to abide by all the signed agreements since last year. Yen Peter says the areas of disagreement between the two parties can be fixed. He says the delegates should think about the suffering of the people who have been affected by the more than 1 year of fighting.
The issues at hand are not too difficult. They should be able to resolve it if the necessary will is showed from all parties.
This final round of talks began on Monday, but so far have yielded little progress. An IGAD official not authorized to speak to the media tells South Sudan in Focus that the mediators are not satisfied with the progress and are reminding both sides there will be no extension of the March 5th deadline. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza, reporting from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan says it is vital for the future of South Sudan that the warring sides agree on a number of issues, including the one that really loggerhead about today, namely what to do with their two armies. Booth says he's at a talk at Addis Ababa and he is calling on President Kiir and Machar to respect commitments they have already made to bring peace to South Sudan. He says if the talks in Addis are to have a real impact on the future of South Sudan, both Kiir and Machar must attend and actively participate in them. South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza spoke with Ambassador Booth in Addis Ababa earlier today.
The role that I try to play in this is that of encouraging the parties to move forward toward a peace agreement, toward formation of the transitional government that they agreed to back in May. We talk frequently with all of the parties, the government, the opposition, all of the other stakeholders who are here, trying to find and understand the positions that they have and helping them find ways that they might compromise with each other to bring peace to South Sudan.
Most of these parties, when you talk to them, what do they tell you?
Well, they all tell me that they want peace. They all, of course, take the high road. There are those who say that the process is not inclusive enough. There are others who say that the warring parties are the ones that need to make the peace agreement. I think the important thing is that the peace agreement that comes out will be one that will enable South Sudan to set itself on a path to a more stable and prosperous future. So the transitional government, which will have to be formed to undertake tasks, very important tasks, such as reforming the security sector, dealing with all of the men under arms, and finding a way to make South Sudan a safer place, of dealing with the public finances to ensure that the wealth of the country is used going forward to help build South Sudan and to help provide for its people and to help rebuild the country from this conflict and to achieve the reconciliation but also accountability for what has happened so that there's no repeat of this in the future. South Sudan has been through too many cycles of violence.
Yesterday was day two since they started the final phase of the peace talks. Today is day three, but yesterday it seems like there were some stumbling blocks, especially with the issues of governance. The two or the three groups could not agree on which document to use to negotiate the power-sharing deal. In fact, the SPLM in opposition expressed their unwillingness to use the Arusha document, and the government is insisting that the Arusha document should be the basis of sharing power within the government. What is the stand of the U.S. government on this new development?
You know, a debate about which document to use is really a procedural debate, and I think what the parties need to be focused on are the substance. Wherever that comes out of, the substantive agreement on power sharing is what is important. So they need to focus on the substance of it, not argue about which document should be the basis of discussion, but actually focus on the substance.
President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are visibly absent at this final phase of the peace talks. And the Troika released a statement, which includes the United States, expressing their regret that President Kiir did not show up. How important is the presence of the two principals at these negotiations?
Both of them committed to being here. And what concerns us is that commitments made by the leaders, we would like to see them respected. And they are going to be necessary. Their presence will be necessary here in order to make decisions and to make the compromises. And as the leaders, really, they should be the ones in the forefront of trying to figure out what those compromises are. So if they're not sitting around the table together, they're basically letting others exercise the leadership, and they are the leaders. So I know that Riek Machar is here in Addis. We hope that President Kiir will soon come as well to try to give these talks the direction and the energy that they need to achieve an agreement by the 5th of March.
That's Ambassador Donald Booth, the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking to South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza in Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa earlier today. Tomorrow, we will air the second part of this interview where the envoy speaks about the role of the international community in South Sudan's conflict. South Sudan in Focus program is funded by the Office of the Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan.
Meanwhile, in New York, the UN Security Council begins discussing imposing sanctions on South Sudan this week as the two sides appear to be no closer to reaching a peace deal. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
South Sudan has been in a cycle of violence for more than a year after a political rivalry between the country's president Salva Kiir and his vice president Riek Machar deteriorated into open fighting that has left thousands dead and displaced nearly 2 million people, causing a catastrophic humanitarian crisis. UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ladsous told the 15-nation council Tuesday that both sides are continuing to mobilize and bring in new recruits, and he expressed frustration with the failure of peace talks to reach a deal.
The government and the opposition do not seem to take the political negotiations seriously, and they appear unwilling to make the necessary compromises.
The Security Council has been threatening to impose sanctions since November, but held off as regional group IGAD tried to mediate a peace. The Council has taken the first step toward imposing sanctions. Diplomats said the United States circulated a draft resolution Tuesday among members aimed at laying the legal groundwork for sanctions. The proposed resolution, seen by VOA, sets out the criteria for individuals and entities who could be sanctioned, including those who contribute to the conflict, obstruct reconciliation, violate human rights, or block humanitarian aid efforts. The draft measure seeks to punish spoilers with travel bans and asset freezes. It also establishes a 5-member panel of experts that would gather information on possible individuals or entities to be sanctioned. What is not clear is whether the Council will impose an arms embargo. In its current form, the draft says the Council would consider any sanctions that would be appropriate to respond to the situation, which could include an arms embargo. Previously, some Council members have expressed opposition to an embargo, saying it would unfairly help the opposition because it is harder to monitor its arms purchases than the government's. Human Rights Watch's UN Director Philippe Bolopion welcomed the proposed resolution, telling VOA that Council action is long overdue.
It's a positive step, and we hope that Security Council members, in particular Russia and China, will quickly go along and send a powerful signal in the country that there will now be a cost to be paid for continued attacks on civilians.
South Sudan's envoy, Francis Deng, tried to discourage consideration of sanctions, telling the Council that they would create an adversarial relationship and aggravate the situation. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, The United Nations.
Members of South Sudan's SPLM party, who were dismissed from their posts when the country plunged into violence are being reinstated again. Among them, the rebel leader Riek Machar and former political detainees Pagan Amum. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Acting SPLM Secretary General Ann Ito says party leaders passed a resolution yesterday to reinstate the ousted party members. Several top party officials, including Machar and Amum, were dismissed by President Salva Kiir last year. Mr. Kiir, who chairs the SPLM, accused the party officials of being part of a failed coup bid in December 2013. All of them have denied the accusation. Mr. Kiir yesterday revoked his decision to fire the officials.
The revocation of decision means those who have been dismissed as a result of the December 15 happening will be welcomed back not only as party members, but also to resume their work in the party assigned to them.
Machar will be able to return to his post as an SPLM deputy chairman, and Amum can resume his duties as the party's secretary general. But there is a condition, Ito says.
We will welcome everybody back to SPLM, but in order for them to resume their position in the party, they must not be having criminal charges against them. They are members of SPLM, yes. They will be welcome back, yes. But eventually they would have to face the court if, in fact, they have some criminal charges.
Amum and Machar were both accused of treason for their alleged roles in the events of December 2013 that triggered the fighting around the country. Amum went on trial for treason, but the government stayed proceedings against him and three others in April last year. Machar fled Juba when the violence broke out and has not been formally charged with the treason. Ito says Mr. Kir issued an executive order yesterday assuring that it is safe for any party member to return to Juba. The president also issued a decree offering amnesty to anyone who took up arms against the government, and another one calling for ceasefire with the rebels, Ito says. Ito says the SPLM leadership also agreed to welcome back defectors who left the ruling party after the conflict began. The SPLM, which grew out of the movement that fought for decades to liberate southern Sudan from Khartoum, splintered into three factions shortly after fighting erupted 14 months ago. Those three factions are led by Mr. Kiir, Machar, and Amum. Last week at a meeting in Arusha, Tanzania, all three SPLM factions agreed to fully implement an agreement to reunify the party. The reunification agreement includes a clause calling for any party officials who were ousted from their posts to be reinstated. Ito says President Kiir yesterday issued an order to the SPLM Secretariat to fully implement the Arusha Pact. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, a scathing Amnesty International report on violence and armed conflict around the world. That story when we come back.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
at what age did you start speaking English?
I started speaking English at the age of 14. Yeah, after I went to my primary school, because I did my I start my school in my local language. Then thereafter I went to book one, book two, and there I was able to speak few English.
I started speaking English earlier on, like when I was 5 years old. It was good speaking English.
I was born during the war. I start speaking English a little bit late, after the age of 15. That's when I start speaking English, and that's when I start my school as well.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Amnesty International released its annual report today in a violence and armed conflict around the world in a report that South Sudan is one of the countries strongly criticized for widespread human rights abuses. Amnesty International South Sudan researcher Elizabeth Deng says South Sudanese people have victimized by the both sides of the 14-month conflict, and they deserve justice.
Well, I mean, as I said, we believe that reconciliation, that sustainable peace, cannot occur without justice and accountability. I think it's been widely noted that the reason why the conflict continues, or one of the reasons, is that there is generally a culture of impunity in South Sudan, in which individuals feel like they can commit human rights abuses with no threat of being brought to court, of facing the law.
Deng says the African Union inquiry and the government's own investigation to authorities committed in country were both completed some time ago, but neither have been published.
In South Sudan, we are disappointed that since the conflict started in December 2013, there has been no accountability for the crimes under international law committed in the course of the conflict. The government established a presidential investigation committee. It completed its report, and this hasn't been published. The report of the African Union Commission of Inquiry in South Sudan also hasn't been published.
In its report, Amnesty International is calling for the five permanent members of the UN Security Council to waive their veto rights in cases where genocide and other mass killings are being committed. Sela Hennessy has more on that from London.
Speaking to VOA, Amnesty International Secretary General Salil Shetty said 2014 has been a catastrophic year for victims of conflict and violence around the world.
As the world has been looking at what happened in 2014, it's clear that millions of civilians from Syria to Ukraine to Gaza to Nigeria have suffered horrific violence and human rights violations.
Amnesty's report says 2014 saw one of the worst refugee crises in history. It says in Syria, 4 million civilians were displaced by war, while thousands of migrants have died in the Mediterranean. Shetty says wealthy countries make more of an effort to keep migrants out than working to keep them alive, and the crisis will only get worse unless leaders commit political and financial resources to help those who are fleeing danger. This challenge, he says, is only going to become greater as the nature of global conflict continues to change.
The rise of armed groups is one of the striking things. Our report discloses that up to 35 countries are now dealing with serious arms groups. Now, it is the duty of governments and international institutions to protect civilians from mass atrocities, but their response, in our view, was dismal and shameful.
Amnesty International Advocacy Director Steve Crawshaw says one of the most striking failures of 2014 was the consistent abuse of the veto by UN Security Council members. The council was set up after World War II and charged with maintaining international peace and security. It has 15 members, with 5 permanent members, Russia, Britain, France, China, and the United States, who have the right to veto any Security Council resolutions. Last year, the veto was used twice in the Council. Russia vetoed a resolution condemning as illegal a referendum on the status of Crimea, and Russia and China blocked a resolution condemning Syria. Steve Crawshaw.
This is a, if you like, a lose-lose situation. The civilians of the world are suffering because of this cozy deal that was cooked up by the powerful members of the Security Council so many years ago.
Amnesty says the permanent members should give up their right to veto in cases where genocide and other mass killings are being committed. Crawshaw says persuading the 5 countries to do so would be an uphill struggle, but is achievable.
The Security Council in New York can sometimes feel a very long way away and somehow removed from all of these issues. It can, of course, be absolutely and very strongly engaged. It's failed on a number of occasions in past years to engage sufficiently for what they would see as geopolitical reasons. They will look away from issues, and I think we need to see an end to that.
Russia says had action in Syria not been blocked, this could have led to President Bashar al-Assad being referred to the International Criminal Court and much greater humanitarian support for civilians. Sela Hennessy for VOA News, London.
How can information and communications technology promote peace and reconciliation in South Sudan? A conference kicked off in Juba today to answer that very question. Mugume David Zwakarin has the story from Juba.
Speaking at the opening of the 3-day conference, Rebecca Joshua Okwachi, South Sudan's Minister of Telecommunications, said the government intends to use ICT to empower youth and spark national development.
As the dynamics of the global and regional economies evolve, information and communication has become an indispensable pillar for competitiveness, as well as a cross-cutting growth engine, especially in socio-economic development, job creation, and poverty alleviation, wealth generating, including citizen access to government services.
In January, South Sudan signed a $15 million deal with Kenya to set up fiber optic cable connecting the two countries for telecommunications. Okwachi says construction will begin soon.
We want to be a working people, and that is how we set ourselves, even during our revolution. We didn't want just a country for the sake of it, but a country where people work, sweat, and earn from their sweat, and also contribute to building the country. So job creation for us is very important.
Thomas Moto Samuel is the chairperson of the local NGO, Youth Technology Development Organization, which helped organize the event, along with UNESCO. He says his group will use ICT to promote peace, non-violence and reconciliation in South Sudan.
Youth are exercising their ideas in war and in things that cannot bring our development. Mostly youth knows things that bring destruction. But ICT as a tool, if we as a South Sudanese youth learn to use ICT properly and learn to use ICT for development, I believe that it will bring a great change to the youths of South Sudan.
But Salah Khalid, UNESCO's South Sudan Office Director, says much more work needs to be done. For example, he says online information and education content in local languages must be produced and made easily accessible to South Sudanese. Khalid says UNESCO lacks ICT facilities, especially internet access, outside urban areas in South Sudan. More than 300 youth from all over the country are attending the conference. They expect to meet regional and international technology experts from companies like Ericsson and Huawei, who will share their knowledge and expertise. Khalid says the government should look beyond this week's workshop and think about developing a technology innovation hub in Juba.
Drawing good practices from the region, such as iHub in Nairobi, that has opened up the IT world for the youth in Kenya, this initiative and the establishment of an internet governance forum in South Sudan, to be supported by the recommendations of this conference, will also provide a platform for lobbying to have multinational companies, such as our partner Huawei, to invest in South Sudan's young women and men.
UNESCO has teamed up with the Hollywood film star Forrest Whitaker to build community ICT learning centers in Torit and Nimule in eastern Equatorial State. A pilot project they hope to take to other parts of South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Indina Belet Jadid by original Ras Corby.
We have been listening to original Ras Corbe with the song Indina Belet Jadid. I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.